listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska, K201 DA in King Cove, Alaska.
Meet your host Lisa Keller on Outdoor Explorer, Thursday at 10 AM, repeating at 8 PM on FM 91.1 or alaskapublic.org.
To Leadership Circle visionaries Eric McCallum and Robin Smith, your support keeps Alaska Public Media going strong. Thank you for making a difference in our community.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. Harlow Robinson, the Executive Director of Healthy Futures, joins me this week for our annual rundown of the year's inductees into the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. Harlow will also tell us about the finalists and winners of the Director's Awards, including the Pride of Alaska Award for Consistent Excellence in Athletic Competition, the Joe Floyd Award for Significant and Lasting Contribution to Alaska Through Sports, and the Trajan Langdon Award for Leadership, Sportsmanship, and Inspiration. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.
This is Ed Ullman. Public media is facing multiple serious threats. The White House issued an executive order to block support for PBS and NPR and plans to claw back funding approved by Congress. If approved, our unique Alaskan programming, sharing Alaska stories with our nation, and relaying potentially life-saving emergency alerts would be in jeopardy. Alaska Public Media has never been more valuable, and it has never been more vulnerable. It's up to us to protect it. Write or call our congressional leaders. Go to protectmypublicmedia.org today.
This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. With me today is Harlow Robinson. He's the Executive Director of Healthy Futures and a founding board member of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. Thanks for joining me today, Harlow.
Lisa, it's always great to hang out with you and check in on things.
Yeah, you and I always do this catch-up before and after the show, so we find out what's happening with our pets and in our lives and stuff. So that's always fun to look forward to this interview in April, so we can find out what's going on.
Absolutely, and you just told me it's a beautiful day in Juneau, and my goal is to let you get out and actually explore the outdoors after the show. So
yes, thank you, because it's been like 3 weeks of driving rain and sometimes driving snow, so kind of done with it this spring here. It's beautiful here though regardless, so
absolutely. Yeah,
we're really lucky, and hopefully in Anchorage you're going to be able to enjoy it later today if the weather stops on you.
Rain or shine, I'll be out there doing something.
Awesome. And that's kind of one of the things we'll touch on briefly today is 100 Miles in May, which is, we're recording this at the end of April. 100 Miles in May starts May 1st, goes through the 31st, but this show will air on May 15th, but there will still be time for anybody who wants to join a team. So we'll talk about that a little bit, but we're really going to focus mostly on the Sports Hall of Fame and who's being inducted this year. And one of the things that's happening this year is the ceremony's a little bit later, which I'm actually very excited about because I'll be able to come. So talk about when and where is the ceremony going to be. And by the way, I was just gobsmacked by this 17th inducted class. So this has been going on for a while. You and I have been chatting for the last 6 years, I think, learning about the inductees. So it's pretty impressive. This has been happening for 17 years. So, tell the folks a little bit about the Sports Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you're right. June is our big event this year. And this is because a couple of our inductees, one of them, we'll talk about them here in a little bit, but traveling didn't work until June. So we obviously want them there. And so we just moved the dates around a little bit. And it turns out this June date seems to be working out really well for a lot of people. So maybe we'll keep doing this, but yes, June 5th at the Anchorage Museum Atrium. We always make this event free and open to the public. There's sort of a VIP VIP component to it with tables and a little reception. But the main part of the ceremony, anyone can come in, and we usually fill the place up, but there's plenty of standing room. That's the great thing about that site there. And everyone that comes for the first time is like, I had no idea this happened every year, and this is amazing. Our goal has always been to make this like the kind of sports banquet awards event for the state. And it's kind of got a little bit of an ESPYs for Alaska feel to it. So it's always a lot of fun. And it'll be fun to talk about the honorees here today.
Mm-hmm. I've only managed to make it once in the past couple of years. And I was just, like you just said, I was so impressed by the whole thing. And you just walk away with this great sense of just accomplishment and inspiration and just all these amazing things that are happening in our state around sports. So really, thank you for getting this going and making it happen and continuing it through the years.
Thanks, Lisa. And yeah, I'm gobsmacked too that it's been 17 years. It sure doesn't seem like it. And one of the things that we set out from the beginning, you know, part of our vision was to make sure that it felt meaningful. As we did that is by inducting really small classes every year to make sure that the people that were, you know, putting portraits on the wall, inducting and enshrining, really kind of reach that, clear that high bar for being, you know, famous and not just very good. Like, we're not the Hall of Very Good. We're truly honoring some very elite athletes.
So on that note, how do the nominations work, and how does the voting and selection work?
So we try to combine the element of public input and element of a very kind of credible selection panel, and because I think both are really important. And we have a selection panel of 9 sports related experts. That's a sort of a combination of journalists, administrators, official coach, sports officials, and I suppose that's probably the main body is made up of, and they're from different regions of the state. And so they meet every year in early December. And the first thing that they have to do is review the public voting that we have on our website, and all the recommendations and nominations that have come in through the course of the year. So they're kind of held accountable to make sure they're listening to the public. And I sit in that room like a fly on the wall. I don't have a vote. I'm the executive director, but I make sure that they are, the public has a role in all this. And oftentimes, you know, even though these are some amazing, amazingly knowledgeable people in sports, there are names from our past history or regions of the state that just hadn't really, been on their radar. And because of this process, they end up even getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it seems to be working really well. So the public has the cumulative vote of the public is one ballot. Each one of those panel members is one ballot. And the 11th and final ballot is the cumulative vote of all the living inductees into the Hall. So they have a little bit of ownership in who joins their club as well. And they take this really seriously, do a lot of research, and seems to be a good process.
Mm-hmm. Did you do the previous, obviously you couldn't do it the first time. So when did that 11th vote start coming in to the process? So did you just like, oh, this is, we have a enough people now that it's a really meaningful vote.
Yeah, I think it was about at least over 10 years in. Mm-hmm. I think we felt at that, you know, we had enough people in the hall to, if you were, for example, and they had 4 people, I think it'd be pretty easy to skew the mm-hmm. the voting one way or the other. But it was a several years in before we added that 11th ballot.
So Harlow, I think last time we spoke, we were talking about you're running out of space, that the actual physical space where all the pictures are is at the airport, and that you were looking at expanding or figuring out something about that. Where are you in that process right now?
Yeah, there's a lot happening right now. I don't want to make any big announcement because we're having meetings. I'll just say we are and continue to be at the Anchorage Airport, but we are looking for at a pretty cool option for a second home in a very public and well attended venue in Anchorage, and I'll leave it at that for now. And
that's so exciting.
That's a little teaser.
Yes,
but you're
it
right.
Is.
We are out of space at the Anchorage Airport, and that's been a great home for us. And it's not that we necessarily want to move out of there, because we get a lot of, where it is now, we get a lot of great traffic, especially with people flying in state around the state. They pass through that hallway, but yes, there's work in progress, and maybe that'll be a subject for another show.
Yes, let me know if we can make a show out of that. I want to talk about that for sure. That's very exciting. So let's dive in to the individual and the moment inductees. There's multiple on both sides. Again, this year, no event inductee. I think we talked about that a little bit last year because there wasn't an event inductee last year. And why is the reason? And traditionally, it was like an individual moment in an event.
Yeah, typically, I mean, on your average year, I think we would induct two people, one moment, one event. Every year for the first 15 years, we inducted one event. And we got to 15, and we just, the board of directors, with my support, just felt like it was a good place to pause for a little bit. I think we will induct more events in the future, but we just want to make sure that there's so many really great events in Alaska, and and there are more to recognize, but they're not going away. And we're just put a little pause on it and come back to it.
Okay, so let's get into the individual inductees. And I feel like, maybe not, this is my feeling, is that there's normally an inductee that is around a outdoor sport in Alaska. But this year, for sure, well, I mean, we have a hockey inductee, so I guess that counts. But then a rugby inductee. So it's pretty exciting to see, especially a rugby inductee. But let's talk about Brandon Dubinsky. Did I get his name right? I'm not a hockey person, so.
You got that right.
Awesome.
So as it is now, we have two hockey players inducted into the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. Pretty household names. Scotty Gomez, very household name. He was a member of our charter class inducted in the Hall of Fame. And then Matt Carl a few years ago as our second. And both of these guys are, starting with Scotty, it was kind of a wave of really talented Alaskans coming along and showing that they could perform on the biggest stage in the National Hockey League. And Scotty was a prolific offensive talent. Matt Carl is a prolific defensive talent. And as a defenseman, Brandon Dubinsky is the perfect mix of the two. And he's widely regarded as the best two-way player in the history of Alaska. He had a long, really productive career, cut a little short at the end because of a wrist injury. But Doyle Woody, he's a member of our longtime sports journalist and a big hockey guy. And he's a member of the selection panel. And when he started talking about Brandon Dubinsky, I feel like everyone in there kind of realized he needs to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And those three are, if you were going to ask any hockey guru who the three hockey players from Alaska that are most deserving of being into the Hall of Fame are, those three names would come up. So it's great that Brandon's finally getting his moment, and he's been retired for 6 years now, so it feels like the timing is really good, and yep, he'll be here for the induction in June.
So he doesn't. Does he live in Alaska? Is he living in Alaska, or where is he living now?
He actually now lives in Ohio, where he wrapped up his career, played a good many years for Columbus, the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mm-hmm. And that's where he still lives. But he's got, you know, a lot of Alaska connections. Much of his family is still here in Anchorage, and I was emailing with him, and he asked if he can get a couple tables, because he's got a lot of friends, family, old coaches, and everything that'll be really excited for the day. So we look forward to having him.
So give us a little bit about his history, how he started, and give us all the, as a non-hockey playing sure. person, tell me about him. What has he done that makes him this perfect mix of offensive, defensive player?
Right. Well, I could tell you throw a few numbers at you. He played 800 career games, which is, you know, these numbers that he put up are, I mentioned Scotty Gomez, but second only to Scotty in offensive numbers, 153 goals, 285 assists, over 823 games. And he came into the league with the New York Rangers. He was actually a teammate of Scotty Gomez the first year. And immediately his first year, he had 24 goals and 30 assists in his very first season. So right off the get-go, he was an offensive, a force. But I think, like I mentioned earlier, being a dual threat means that not only he wasn't just out there for to score goals, but he was often, I know you're not a hockey person, but he would be put out there in shorthanded situations where there was a penalty to kill, and they needed to have people that could, hunker down and keep the other team from scoring. And he was also prolifically talented at winning faceoffs, which is really important when you're back protecting your own goal in a power play situation. So he was valued for that. And another thing that is big about hockey is sometimes you have to fight. And he...
I noticed that when I read about him yesterday.
I did have some numbers here, but 905 career penalty minutes. And I like the way Doyle wrote about him. He wasn't a dirty player at all, but he often got his nose dirty. So he was very quick to stick up for teammates, stick up for himself if he had to. And I think when you, if you want to kind of consider how Brandon fits into the, the overall conversation about great hockey players, he's certainly the most well-rounded and was very good at everything, if not great.
All right. So let's move on to the next individual inductee. And I hope, I've never pronounced her name. Alev?
That's right. You got it.
Alev Kelter. And I definitely know who she is, even though I'm not a rugby person either, but I know who she is. Quite impressive. So tell us about Alev Kelter.
There's kind of a little bit of a theme here with the talented everything type of athletes. And for Alev, we know her now as one of the best women rugby players ever to come out of America. And just as recently as last summer in the Paris Olympics, she was on the pitch and even scored in the bronze medal game that they won dramatically on the last second try, 14-12, I believe, over Australia. And the first ever Olympic medal in rugby for the women's rugby team. And Alev Kelter had a huge part in all that. But if you follow sports in Alaska, you probably remember Alev Kelter as a Chugiak High School athlete who was like all world at everything. She was truly amazing. I think you could make a case for her being the best multi-sport athlete that's ever come out of our state. Here's some amazing facts about her. She was on the U18, so the national U18 hockey team as a high school athlete, and she was also on the U16 national soccer team as a high school player from Alaska.
Wow.
So, and she also was a phenomenal flag football player in the early kind of first few years of flag football in Anchorage, so, which is no big surprise. And then, of course, she went on to compete at the University of Wisconsin at the D1 level and was a star and a national, continued to be on national teams for both hockey and soccer. So just that resume alone is worthy of induction into the hall. But, you know, then once her collegiate career was over, she turned to rugby. Rugby's sort of a developing sport in our country. And she was a big part of that, kind of taking rugby from being, you know, United States getting pummeled in these competitions to United States winning a medal at the Olympics. Aleva's right in the middle of all that. And like a lot of her teammates, she excelled in other sports. And as they're trying to build the sport up in America, they looked at these kind of elite level athletes that were just super dynamic and trained them up in rugby. And she's a natural.
That kind of reminds me of the beginning of triathlon, where they were starting to look for people who were really good swimmers or really good runners, but you could train them into cycling. So those were the two sports you kind of looked for first. But it's a testimony to being a multi-sport athlete, your adaptability to be able to get into these emerging sports and really make a difference.
Yeah. Well, with Alev, it always felt like it was a matter of time. And we don't have an age limit or any in our criteria, any guidelines or rules about a person having to have been retired from a certain sport for a certain number of years. So it's because it's so hard to compare a dog musher to a pro basketball player or whatever.
Yeah.
So really the panel just kind of just makes these decisions as they're having the discussion about whether they feel the timing is right and their mm-hmm. body of work is sufficient. And I feel like with Alev, everyone in the room felt like she's a no doubter. It's just a matter of when is the right time. And after the performance at the Olympics last summer, mm-hmm. I think it was just kind of impossible to ignore anymore. And if it's exciting because it's so fresh, and it'll be exciting to kind of give her an extra round of applause for her Olympic performance when she's here in June.
So she is living outside as well, but I know that she comes back quite often and does camps and really gives back a lot to the Anchorage community, because that's maybe when I first became aware of her, was just seeing how she, and I shouldn't just say Anchorage, the Alaska community, how she comes back and puts on camps and gets kids introduced to rugby.
She's definitely stayed very connected and has, like Brandon, has a lot of family here in the Eagle River, Anchorage area. And you're right, she does give a lot back. I've heard nothing but great things about her as a person. I'm excited to finally meet her. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's really rewarding about this job that I have is without fail, when I've reached out to these athletes to, you know, make the phone call and let them know that they've been selected to be inducted, the response has always been, you know, overwhelming gratitude and feeling, you know, honored and just overwhelmed by the moment. And that means a lot. It means a lot to me that both Lev and Brandon wanted to be here and figure out they're both busy with their lives. Alev is actually playing professional rugby in London right now.
Wow.
And then she's going to be joining a newly formed league in the States later this year. So she's got a lot going on, but you know, it means a lot when you see how that Alaska connection sticks with people mm-hmm. as they go out into the world and have successes in sports and beyond. So
that just it's very heartwarming to have all these athletes come back who've performed at such a high level and then come back and give back to the community and keep their connections to the place that we love. So let's move on to the moment inductees. So the first one is Mario Chalmers' game-saving three-pointer in the NCAA title game in 2008. I vaguely remember it. 2008 seems like a long time ago.
This is, it's interesting. The reason we selected two moments this year is because they came out so close in the voting, and we looked at it and decided, you know, let's bring them both in at the same time. They're very different kinds of moments. We'll talk about the Olympic bid in a second, but with Mario, this is one of those that people, that especially basketball fans, remember where they were when it happened, and that's kind of a nice litmus test for the moments that we induct. They're really his little snapshots in our history that kind of shape our consciousness and our culture and our pride of who we are. And everyone just calls it Mario's shot, because it was the biggest basketball play in Alaska sports history. I say Alaska sports history. Mario Chalmers was a star point guard for the Kansas Jayhawks. So this was actually in the NCAA title game, like you said. And people that watched it will remember well that it was kind of a frantic scramble play. Time was running out. The play was sort of a broken play, and Mario he obviously went on to have a decorated career in the NBA after this and won a couple of national championships. So he was a very talented guard, but he also always had great court sense and awareness of game and situation. And looking back at what happened, he read the situation perfectly. He could see that it was sort of a broken play. And as the guy dribbling the ball down the court was sort of stumbling and getting trapped by two defenders, he came around behind him, made himself available to catch a pass, and just had time to rise up and shoot over a defender. And it was just one of those beautiful, picture perfect moments where the ball's released, travels through the air, and you can see in the iconic photo that was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, it's actually going to be on the induction portrait. You can just see all the people, like every eyeball in the stadium is watching that ball, and, you know, splash, nothing but net.
That just gave me goosebumps. Yeah. That explanation, that was like amazing.
Yes. And like I said, you remember where you were if you saw it. I myself was skiing at Alyeska. And so, and we had two young boys at the time, and I told my wife, I'm going to need to watch this. And thank goodness I did. I came back, I was just like, I was out of my skin, excited. I watched it at the Alyeska Resort Hotel in the bar there. And, you know, I looked around and most of the people in there were tourists and they weren't really that engaged, but I was like, he's from Alaska, you know, and so excited. But that shot, it wasn't a game winner. It was a game saving shot. It tied the game and then put the game into overtime, and Kansas went on to win the game. Mario Chalmers was named the outstanding player of the March Madness tournament, which is a huge mm-hmm. honor. And then, of course, you know, went on to have that great career in the NBA that, you know, I think when you look at Mario Chalmers, the athlete, it's hard to know what is the highest up on his resume. It's, you know, is it NBA champion, a multi-time champion, you know, playing alongside LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, et cetera, or is it his, you know, the shot, Mario's shot? Mm-hmm. Quite a It's such a special moment that and you might know this, Lisa, I think the legislature made a declaration that April 16th will now be known as Mario Chalmers Day.
Oh, you know what? I will go check that out. I will, because there's an archive of all the citations. So I bet it was a citation.
Yeah, I wanna get to the bottom of that. And I heard a rumor about it. I think I missed that in the news cycle. But certainly, if we do have a Mario Chalmers Day, I would like for a legislator to be there at the ceremony to kind of share that publicly and promote that, because I think that's a great idea.
I will look into that for you. I'll see what I can do. Tell a little bit about Mario's backstory, his high school he went to, when he started playing basketball, any of those little details. And he's not in Alaska anymore, is he? Does he live outside now as well?
Yeah, Mario is, he lives down in North Carolina, I believe, and he's still playing basketball. He's in, there's a league, a three-on-three league, which is mostly retired NBA players. And he's still playing basketball at a high level, and involved with that. But his he grew up here in Anchorage, and he kind of followed in the footsteps of Trajan Langdon, who was the first truly great Alaskan basketball player that went on to play in the NBA, and Mario several years after that kind of became the next great. You know, the next big thing, where as early as his freshman year in high school, he was already being recruited to, big Division I schools. And I believe he and Trajan and Carlos Boozer are the only five-star, high school basketball recruits to ever come out of Alaska. And so he played at Bartlett High. He's one of a very small group of a very elite, exclusive club of basketball players that won a high school championship, college national championship, and NBA title. I think that's a tiny elite club. So
yeah,
pretty special career. His father, Ronnie, was his coach at Bartlett, and his mother, Al-Marie, I just spoke with her yesterday, and they're really excited and planning on being here for the ceremony. So really looking forward to that.
Oh man, this ceremony is going to be so awesome with all these family and friends of everybody,
right?
And all the connections still here. I just love it.
It's really fun. And, just the combination of these kind of superstar inductee athletes, and then the athlete of the year, that end of the show really makes it special. So
yeah,
I know we'll talk about them here in a sec.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll hear more from Harlow Robinson about the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame 2025 honorees.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. Connecting Alaskans, life informed.
Thank you to Leadership Circle visionary Paul Daggett for the commitment to context, depth, and community demonstrated through his financial support.
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from sustaining members and from
Alaska Air Transit, flying Alaskan families, essential workforce, and cargo to communities statewide, specializing in on-demand charters. There's more at flyaat.com.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My conversation with Harlow Robinson, Executive Director of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame, continues. We have to talk about the moment inductee, which is near and dear to my heart, because I remember all of this happening. This was a big part of my young adulthood in Anchorage, and that's when Anchorage was named America's choice to host the 1992 Winter Olympics. This was, if you lived here during that time, this was a huge deal. I mean, the Byron Birdsall poster and everybody remembers all those things. So, and the wild about, I didn't realize the wild about Anchorage lingo came up during that time to kind of promote Anchorage as a great destination. And I watched that the other day. It happened to come up on YouTube, which is kind of weird. And so I watched it. I was like, oh man, this wild about Anchorage lingo dance was kind of crazy. And then there was a crab in it, and I don't know where the crab came from, because I don't think there's a lot of crabs around Anchorage.
Was that when Seymour the Moose came about?
Yes, I think it was around the same time. You probably remember these things, don't you?
I do.
Were you in Anchorage, or you were?
No, I was at that time. I think I was off at University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was around.
So, let's talk about that, because this is like nostalgia to me. So,
yeah, well, maybe you can fill in some of the details, but
I hope I remember.
This is unlike Mario's shot, which was an isolated instant that was happened and it was over. This is something that, you know, I think our selection panel, they kind of got their idea or their mind around this as a moment. And it's like, well, what kind of moment was it? It was kind of something that happened over a long period of time. But I think everyone agreed that this was one of the most culturally impactful things that has happened in our state. It was sort of a self-esteem building moment for us, if you will, when we realized that Anchorage, and really by extension the whole state of Alaska, could compete with the big boys, and we could host the Olympics here in our city, in our state. We became America's choice to host the 1992 Olympics, and thanks to a phenomenally well organized campaign orchestrated by Rick Maestrom, former mayor Rick Maestrom, and a lot of other really dynamic community leaders. I think they wowed everyone on the with their Olympic bid, and kind of came out of nowhere. I think most people were not expecting Anchorage to do nearly so well. Ultimately, the bid went to Lillehammer, Norway. It was a disappointment for Anchorage. Depending on who you talk to, there was a certain amount of politics and possibly corruption involved in the decision making that happened. But I think what came out of that is that we began to really be viewed as an international destination for competitions, whether it was at Kincaid with World Cup ski races, or Alyeska Resort downhill races. It kind of propelled Anchorage and the surrounding area to not just in sports, but as a city to be viewed as a legitimate destination for international events.
And I have to say, especially maybe in the last 10 or 15 years, you've definitely seen that play out. You know, there are so many, it seems like, national, international events happening in winter sports. So I think I kind of feel like living through that time, that the 90s were kind of a revitalization of Anchorage, too. You know, we kind of fallen into a little disrepair after the pipeline years and the 80s recession. And then really in the 90s was when things in Anchorage really, we felt a lot more modern. And I don't know if putting us on the international stage like that kind of upped everybody's game in Anchorage and made Anchorage a much better place to live than it had been when we were growing up, when it was kind of a oil town that was rough and tumble and, you know, lots of things were happening. So to me, that was just a really critical moment in our history. So I was really excited to see this. Why do you think, so that's been like 33 years. Is there going to be another push ever? Because it seems like Alaska, at least as the whole state, not this year, but maybe one of the most reliable places to have winter events in the future.
Well, yeah, that's a great question, and I'm probably not qualified to answer, but the cost of putting on an Olympic, the full winter Olympic experience now is so much more than it was 30 years ago. There's so many more sports. The expectations for the venues is much more than it used to be. And I also think there's a pretty long track record of cities experiencing more debt than financial success after the Olympics now, and so it's not as appealing as it once was to. I think we're seeing it now, where we're seeing repeat, Salt Lake City is looking like the choice to repeat as a host, which probably makes sense just because they have all the facilities in place. So I don't know, Lisa. I personally would love to see Anchorage host a Winter Olympics, mm-hmm. but the financial realities might make it impossible, and just it's just a different world and landscape than it was back in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, you do see a lot of Olympic cities that have all their facilities and venues have fallen into disrepair, and so it does make sense to kind of do repeat Olympic games, and it's also actually in a lot of ways better for the athletes to know the variables are going to be kind of the same too. So it's easier to train for those sort of things, that they aren't going to be on a mountains that are like way different than what they've done in past Olympics or whatever. So it does kind of make sense to stay with the same places.
Yeah. And you know, as far as the thing, how it's changed, I mean, just thinking about all the new sports, like consider snowboarding and, right. All the half pipes and not just half pipes, but freestyle events where you really almost need a whole nother ski area to be able to accommodate mm-hmm. all the facilities you need for the events. And I don't know. I mean, it would be really amazing. I wish that it would have happened back in the 90s. I think Anchorage is a great venue. It's a great destination. It would have changed our state forever to host the Olympics. We probably could have pulled it off back in the 90s. It'd be more difficult now.
All right. So let's see. We have a little bit of time left, and we definitely want to get to these directors' awards. But you and I came up with a plan this year, and that we're going to have to highlight just a few. And we kind of will go through everybody who won what awards and what those awards are. And the director's awards are more like what has happened in the last year, as opposed to the Hall of Fame that's looking back over time. So let's start with the Pride of Alaska Award, which is we have youth awards and adult awards. So just explain what the Pride of Alaska Award is.
It's essentially your athlete of the year. And so we do an adult Pride of Alaska, a male and female, and high school Pride of Alaska. So we're looking at athletic excellence over the past year.
Okay. So in the youth awards, we have Jack. I knew I was not going to get his name right, Harlow.
Levesque. Yes.
Sorry about that, Jack. And he's a Nordic skier. And then we have Layla Hayes, who plays volleyball. And we'll hit on our ones that we're going to focus on. And if we have time, we'll come back and fill in some details. But the Pride of Alaska Awards for the adults. Now, one of these people we are going to talk about. So we have Kristen Faulkner, who's a cyclist. She was the Olympian last year, won two gold medals in different disciplines of cycling, which is incredibly hard. And then we have David Norris, who is an elite trail runner and set a new record at Mount Marathon. Fairly among the endurance community in Anchorage, everybody should know who David Norris is. So I really want to focus on Kristen Faulkner with this one, because this was just an incredible out of nowhere feat that she pulled off.
Yeah, we're talking about moments. And by the way, while I'm remembering, thinking about it, it's Lovick, not Lovick.
So okay.
Let me get that right for Jack.
Yeah, sorry, Jack. We're getting lots of airtime on your name all around, so.
yeah, this is another, we spent time talking about Mario Chalmers. This feels very much like that kind of moment where, mm-hmm. you know, you look at, you're watching the screen and going, she's from Alaska. And,
yes, it was chilling. It was great.
Whether you're a cycling fan or not, that was just an exhilarating, I can't even think of the right word for hair-raising, spectacular gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I had this discussion with someone the other day about the Mount Rushmore that we could put together of Olympic gold medalists and just exhilarating moments, from Tommy Moe to yeah. Keegan Randall to Lydia Jacoby to now Kristen Faulkner. And
mm-hmm.
I'd have a hard time telling you which one was more phenomenal, but certainly Kristen Faulkner and what she did, and you said out of nowhere, it is really true. She's obviously a phenomenal athlete, but growing up in Homer, she was not a biker, not a cyclist. Mm-hmm. She did in college at Harvard. She was on the, and I believe growing up going to boarding school, she was on the crew team. So she was an elite level athlete, but it wasn't until she was graduated from college and she was working in Silicon Valley and she kind of missed competing and she got involved in cycling that way that she slowly kind of discovered her talent in that sport. And so she came on to it really relatively late in life. She was, I believe, in her late 20s before she was competing, cycling at a competitive level. And, and there she was in an event that she wasn't even supposed to enter. And it was only because of an injured teammate that she got rostered in the road race kind of at the 11th hour. And there was another teammate that was kind of the one that was a potential medal winner. So certainly going into that race, no one was focused on her. And as the race went on, she just kind of she hung close, and then late in the race, just phenomenal. I know people that watched it will remember well, but going through the Louvre and all these amazing backdrops of Paris, she made one of the most epic racing moves, not just in cycling, but in all sports history, to pass, I believe it was a Belgian woman, and the two of the race favorites that everyone kind of thought the two of them were battling for a gold, and she reeled them in, and then once she caught them, she just kept going. And it was this moment of sheer power and dominance where you could see the other riders were like, we can't match that.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew at that moment that she was on her own and riding for gold, and she was so determined and focused that when she crossed the line, she just kept riding and rode till she reached the end of the stadium. Because I think I read an interview of hers later that she was just focused, her focus was so narrow that she really wasn't sure where the finish line was. And mm-hmm. she just wanted to ride until she was out of real estate just to make sure. Whereas the men's winner, a little later, when he finished, he got up his bike, walked across the finish line with his bike up in the air, you know, showing off to the crowd. And Kristen was, you could see that she had not been there before, and she mm-hmm. wanted to make sure she didn't mess anything up.
Yeah, that was just so amazing. But and then to turn around in the pursuit, the track pursuit.
Right.
Which is a completely different discipline. I mean, you know, if you're in these kind of sports that have all these different events like this, you really understand, like, it's just it's just incredibly different types of skills and fitness that you need to rely on to be successful in both of those.
Right. And that was the discipline that she was expected to compete for a medal. And she did win a medal. So two gold medals. I'd feel sorry for all the other candidates in this category, because there were some truly great ones that on any other year would have been great Pride of Alaska women's winners. But kind of much like Lydia Jacoby a couple of years ago, it was kind of a hard one to compete against her.
Yeah, if you've gone and won an Olympic medal, that's really hard to up. So the next category is the Joe Floyd Award, and this is for community contribution through sports. And Dane Ferguson won this, and what was compelling to me is that he passed away. He was very young, 44, in December. And I don't know about Dane Ferguson, so tell us about Dane Ferguson.
So in Alaska, I guess we say snow machine instead of snowmobile. Dane, I guess... was first kind of came on the scene as an X Games competitor and gold medalist in snowcross, or was it snowcross, snow X. So he won a gold medal in the X Games on the snow machine and became a bit of a celebrity at a really young age, in his 20s, for that. And but later I first met him in his 30s. He was probably in his early 30s, and he was representing the snow machine community, wanting to put snowcross in the where there's motocross at Kincaid, and try to carve out a space for that community there at Kincaid. And I was on the Parks and Recreation Commission at the time. And you can imagine the contentiousness around this issue between the snow machine community and the Nordic ski community. And it was by far the most heated meeting I've been a part of, and standing room only, a couple hundred people in there. And the thing that blew me away was how composed and mature and respectful this young man was. I think the impression from the Nordic ski community was that they were not going to be willing to work together. And Dane was a phenomenal ambassador and consensus builder. And Jim Burkholder, who's a longtime Nordic ski advocate, and him became close through the process. And I remember Dane saying, you know, we actually are really similar personalities. And he made some comments that just really impressed me for a young man. It just became evident that he was truly about community and doing things that were going to be make it a better community for all people, not just his own interest group. And so that was really kind of the last I'd seen and heard of Dane for quite some time. I was really disappointed and sad to hear of his passing on Christmas Day. And like you said, he was only 44, and it was a unfortunate medical complication during surgery. He's going to be dearly missed, and it's going to leave a huge void in not just the snow machine community. So I guess since that time that I met him back then, he went on to form a youth snow machine club that basically taught kids how to ride safely. And he also got, as a side thing, really involved in the Ukraine war and helping Ukrainians that were suffering during the war. And he was spending most of his time in recent years over in Ukraine, helping with food, medical supplies, etc. So I think describing Dane, you would say humanitarian to the core, and an amazing athlete, and an amazing leader, and obviously gone too soon. we wish that we were presenting this award to him instead of posthumously. But I think it'll be a nice way to pay tribute to him. And I know there are a lot of people in his, you know, friends, family, and people in his community that are going to be happy to be able to be a part of paying tribute mm-hmm. with it. And by the way, the Joe Floyd Award is, at its core, it is for people exactly like Dane that make their communities better through sports. So mm-hmm. well deserved.
Yeah. A nice memoriam for him. So the final award is the Trange Langdon Award, and that's for leadership, sportsmanship, and inspiration. And the adult Trange Langdon Award winner is Rebecca McKee, a well-known triathlete. And the youth award is to Jackson Snarik, who's a football player. And I think we only have a very little time, and I'd really like to talk about Jackson because he's overcome a significant disability in football, and his story is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's what we're really recognizing here is overcoming adversity. He has, it's the medical term, Poulin syndrome. He has essentially a withered arm, so he's playing football with one arm, and not only is he playing, but he was a superstar for the team. Mm-hmm. Defensive back that made the game-saving interception in the state championship game.
Who does he play for?
For the Homer High School, okay. The Homer Mariners.
Okay.
And I'd heard about him. I received several nominations. We have a really comprehensive process for getting all these candidates on the ballot, and heard a lot about him. When he did win the vote and I contacted his coach said, this is going to make our community needed some good news like this. And he was so happy that all of his coaches are going to come up for the ceremony. He's obviously an inspirational leader, mm-hmm. not just for their team, but in the community. And by all accounts, a fine young man. And we love this award because it recognizes those kind of transcendent aspects of sports and looking at people that just have amazing character. And Jackson mm-hmm. definitely fits the bill.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is very inspirational and a great write-up about him on the website. And if anyone wants to have more information about any of these award winners, that's a great place to get that information is Alaska Sports Hall of Fame website. And we will have a connection to that on the alaskapublic.org page. And then we'll also have pictures of everyone. And then very quickly, I just want to give a shout out to 100 Miles of May, which we're in the middle of May right now, but you can still join that. And it's really helps you get motivated in this transition month to get back out there and start being outside or inside. There's all kinds of activities you can do that count towards your 100 miles in May. Harlow, thanks again for joining me today. This has been fantastic. I can't wait to be there on June 5th. I'm looking forward to the ceremony and seeing all the inspiration in person.
Well, we look forward to having you, Lisa. It's going to be a really special evening.
Awesome. That's it for today's show. Thanks to my guest, Harlow Robinson. You can find pictures and links to the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame and the Healthy Futures 100 Miles in May on the Outdoor Explorer page on alaskapublic.org. The show was produced by Tobin Shelby with help from Ammon Swenson. My name is Lisa Keller, and from all of our hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man.
KSDP is generously supported by Precision Airways in Sandpoint, Alaska, offering chartered air services throughout the Aleutians Eastboro and beyond. For more information on charters and prices, Theo is available at 907-989-4080. Precision Airways is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National